You're listening to Have Mike Will Travel with Elizabeth Santry.
Hi, welcome. This episode was recorded in Los Angeles. I drove out to Echo Park to meet up with Chris Chow. Now, for her job, she's a full-time fashion designer. In addition, she's an artist and a painter. I think she would actually identify with painter more. We hung out at her house to record the episode. She gave me a quick tour. She has this dreamy one-bedroom cottage tucked away from the street. But before that, she took me out to lunch, which was super generous. What's cool about this episode is that it gave me the chance to have my first outdoor recording. Her back patio is great. She describes it as a Huck Finn raft, and it's cool. She's got a canopy that she installed from an old sail and a freestanding chimney. It's got the feel. And she actually brought out a lot of her work, and it was surrounding us while we had the interview. It was a really great mood to set. I really hope you enjoy this episode. Well, it's a beautiful day, and we just had a really nice walk. I really appreciate you having me today. And we're in a neighborhood of LA, just kicking it. And yep. I have to be honest, like, I don't usually have this opportunity. We just had a righteous lunch. Just really set the tone, though. And so this interview might be, like, super casual in a way that, like, I try to stay away from to be more professional. But we've got a good banter vibe going on right now. We just had a really delicious lunch. And so we're in LA. The show is location-based. Why don't you tell me about your journey, specifically, like, you know, to be in LA. From talking to you at lunch, you have these great observations of places. So how you got about to being here, literally in LA?
We're going to go far back. So I am from Honolulu, Hawaii. I was born and raised, and I left Hawaii to go to art school in Oakland and San Francisco. And after graduating, I wanted to see snow, and I wanted to know what living on the East Coast was like. And so looking at major cities like New York, which everyone was moving to, and especially after the really high rents of living in the Bay Area, even in 2002, I decided I didn't want to pay a lot of money for rent. And that was a huge deciding factor. I just wanted to, you know, like, make art and drink 40s, ride bikes, kiss boys. I didn't want a major...
You did not want money to be in the way.
I didn't want money to stop me from living a life. And so, or like, you know, just trying to jump into something that I wasn't sure about yet. I randomly chose Philadelphia. I knew maybe like one person there from Hawaii. And then I didn't have any other friends. She wasn't even really a friend. She was like an acquaintance who told me, you know, it was cool. And then I had researched that I didn't need a lot of money to live there. So I went into it and I just brought one box of books and one suitcase of clothes to Philadelphia. And for four years, you know, worked at the Diesel store and a bakery and had weird jobs and did exactly that. Rode my bike, drank 40s, kissed boys. After living in a bay, $1,200 for my basement apartment for $1,200 or even way less, like $900, I could get an entire second floor of a building in Philly, which kind of allowed me to make art. Kind of just like bop around.
Yeah.
And then I accidentally got a fashion design job, which is like that. We can get into that, but that's why I live in Los Angeles now, because I then, after living in Philly for 4 years, accidentally got a fashion design job, worked there for, I guess, like almost six years. No, I'm going on 8 years. And then 6 years into it, they had asked me to move to Los Angeles. Which is something I...
Like, was that... What was the immediate reaction to being asked? I mean, the other side of the country and totally different vibes. Place you hadn't... Correct me if I'm wrong. Place you hadn't lived before.
Never lived before.
And it's funny almost, like, did you feel like something else was leading that question to your life? Like, did you feel... Or were you just like, oh, my job's asking me to move somewhere else?
No, I... I'm a big purveyor of, like, no one tells me what to do with my life. If I wanted to move to the West Coast, I would have. And so for me, I was really upset. I had just bought a house that I was destroying to learn maybe some new life skills. And then I was like, you need to... It's, and I was like, I'm not, like, a 20-year-old, like, I have a studio, like I make stuff, I have a whole life that you don't really know about, and you need to give me a month to think about it.
Yeah.
And I cried about it a lot. And then I had a really dear friend, Dob Hanshaw, who is our creative director for Free People, and she was like, it's an adventure, just do it, like everything will work out. And she's like, geez, I want to go there too. And then I just took it and I ran with it, and now I'm here. I've been here for 2 years in Los Angeles.
And how's the transition? Was it smooth or was it bumpy?
It was definitely, in a financial sense, easy.
Okay.
In a financial sense, it wasn't as hard. I mean, I definitely had no money because I was paying a mortgage and renting a place and like transitioning my life over. Mm-hmm. But I mean, definitely work did assist me in moving, mm-hmm. like moving expenses. Mm-hmm. And so it was way easier. It was easy in that sense. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Financially easy. So it was easy to be here because I got basically 1 week to move my life and then start working immediately.
Yeah.
In a place that I'd never lived before.
It's daunting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think no matter how old you are, I think ripping your life up and going somewhere else, it takes a little bit
of
courage.
It's wild. Yeah. But kind of beautiful, too. I mean, like, you have to restart.
Does L.A. feel like home?
Yes.
And when did that happen? Do you remember the moment? Was there a moment, or just before you knew it, it was happening?
Before I knew it, it was happening. L.A. is a huge sigh of relief, and it's I guess my favorite way to explain it is in Philly, everything is close. It's an old city. There's row homes that are like, you share a wall. People are close. Mm-hmm. You walk, you take a subway. There's one lane streets. It's close. In LA, it's not close. It's expansive and there's driving and you're isolated and there's a lot of space. But in a weird way, it also allowed me emotional, mental space too. Like not only there was the physical space, but mentally. And so I found home a little bit more in myself.
Oh.
And it was like, and it was nice. Like, and I have a really, I'm really lucky. I have a really good set of friends here, mm-hmm. which is the hardest thing about moving to LA is because of the isolation and expansiveness, it's hard to find good people.
Mm-hmm.
So I already had them who was, they were really sweet. They were like, we were waiting for you.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. It's crazy lucky.
That is cool. Yeah. So you talk about, okay, I want to switch.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I think this could be a whole conversation in itself, how you can go from an island and then to the U.S. continentally, one side, and then you're going back and forth and back. You must be a real connoisseur of observing cultures, like American cultures, because you've been in all these different diverse American cultures. But I almost feel like we need to talk about other things. We won't get to it because thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wanted to talk about how you transitioned from, like, where did you find it in yourself to do fashion from art, because you're really grounded in fine art in so many ways, and I just wanted to know where that came from.
I don't either, to be honest with you. Designing clothes is something that was serendipitous. It's not something that I sought out to do ever. And then for a long time I was in denial that I was even doing it, and mm-hmm. I've only recently come to the conclusion, like, oh, I'm a fashion designer, I can design clothes. But like, I think, and this may sound like naive or maybe, I don't know, idealistic, but I think all, maybe visual people, I'm not quite sure, but like for me, designing clothes, since I came from like illustration and drawing and painting, it's like just circles and squares.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if anyone asks me, even if you ask anyone that knows me and the way I design clothes, it's just circles and squares. Like the human body is like basically circles.
Mm-hmm.
And so like designing clothes is just, and anyone who's observing culture can observe, like, trends.
Okay.
You know, so you can easily observe, like, what type of clothes people
are
going to wear.
So what circles or squares are in at the
time?
What
circles are squares and what length of circles are squares. Yeah. And, like, I think if you're paying attention culturally and you are, basically, if you're paying attention, you can design anything.
I think it's amazing how you're kind of glossing over the technical spot. Like, how did the technical part come in? Because with designing anything, like, you know, you need to know software, you need to know nomenclature, like the vocabulary, you need to know, sometimes you need to know the full process of how it gets done so that you can do a really good job of designing it, like production, you know what I mean?
Right.
Where did all that come in?
Right.
So you had no schooling
in
this.
No,
and how did you end up learning this?
I don't think, and I asked people who went to school for it, because I was feeling a little, really insecure about it for a really long time, that I didn't go to school for it, but as we all know, because we're all in our 30s, that you don't need school.
Yes.
In many ways. School maybe gives you, like, the foundation to be like, I know how to do this, or I set out to do this, but I think any empathetic, detail-oriented, hardworking human can pretty much take it on. And production and pattern making and technical things, mm-hmm. I learned by just asking questions and being a nice person and not, okay. and basically being honest, I didn't know how to do it. Most fashion designers go into it like, I'm a fashion designer.
Okay.
So there's a lot of ego there where it's like, I know how to do this. You don't tell me how to do this.
Right.
And that already sets you back because you're not taking anything with you. Like, I went into it like, I'm so sorry, I don't know how to do any of this. Can you please tell me how you do it?
And I feel like that's just one piece of the pie, because I think that for myself, I could probably replicate that, you know, a sincere, sweet way and a non-intrusive way of asking. But the actual learning, I think you might be giving, you know, not giving yourself enough credit. Like, because for me, sometimes I struggle to learn the lesson while I'm in the moment. I almost need to step away from the moment to then learn it.
Yeah.
And here you are. So correct me if I'm wrong. You got hired to do something you didn't technically know how to do.
No. Yeah.
And you're learning as you go in a professional setting where it's like you could be fired if you don't know what you're doing, which is the difference between school. You
right.
can't get fired from
exactly.
university.
I don't know. And I work for Free People. And I think in the beginning, I'm not sure if anyone really knows exactly what they're doing. And so
that, is that like the part of the structure, the model of just like being looser?
It's a little bit a part of the structure. And also, like, I think I had some really kind moments that helped, I guess, like just in terms of confidence, get through it. Like, I've had a nice boss say, like, we hired you because you had good taste. We liked what you were wearing. And so just apply that. And in technical terms for fitting clothes, I had, you know, a really great boss say, it's like, you know, it's like you're fitting it on your best friend. You're going shopping. Like, you don't want to look bad. We don't want people to look bad. Like, how do you make her look good?
Mm-hmm.
And like then it's translating something technical or maybe scary into like layman's terms where
mm-hmm.
it's like,
mm-hmm.
this is all this is. We're just making people look good mm-hmm. and we're making things that don't fall apart.
Yeah. And that's cool.
Yeah.
It's a good attitude to have.
Yeah.
So let's segue into your personal work. And the sketches, the drawings, the painting. And I pick out such a surrealism going on that I'm wondering, it makes me just wonder what, in surreal moments of your life, which is most obviously sleep, you know, sleeping and dreams, like, have you ever thought about, like, describing your dreams? Like, what do they look like? Is there a sound, a color, a vibe, a tone?
I get a lot of reoccurring dreams.
Oh.
I get pattern dreams. Maybe the situation is the same, but maybe players change as your life changes with people.
Mm-hmm.
But I get a lot of like situation dreams. Like I get a lot of obvious anxiety work dreams or anxiety life dreams,
mm-hmm.
Which for me manifests in no teeth, no shoes, and jail.
Wow. All together.
Well, separately, sometimes all together. Sometimes all together. And then like, and you know, social anxiety dreams where it's like, you're in jail and all your friends show up to say that you deserve to be there and we're not your friends anymore. Woo!
Heavy.
Heavy. Insight into my anxieties.
Well, everyone's got it. It's just how you manage.
Yeah.
That's why I love to bring it up to some degree. Because
yeah.
What I don't like the idea is anyone feeling alone within their anxiety, because we all have it.
We all have it.
Yeah.
It's so real that every day it's like, am I a fraud? Am I a bad friend?
Yes.
Is it like
a lot of people
fraud?
Under that.
Totally.
Especially if you do well.
Yep.
And if you're having any type of successes.
Yep.
Wondering if you deserve it. I think a lot of
fraud.
People feel that more than they will admit.
Totally. I always feel like I actually asked one of our office managers at my design job to, because you know I didn't go to school for it, that one day I'm gonna get let go, and I told her, I was like, the way you do it, and please promise me if I ever get fired that you're gonna come up behind me, put your hand on my shoulder and say, the jig is up. Pack up your things and leave the building. And it was like, for some reason, totally acceptable. Like, that's cool. Like, oh, you're right. The jig is up. My ride is over. But that's not the case. Like, everyone works hard.
Yeah.
I'm there for a reason.
Yeah.
Everybody
has
this fraud.
But I love the sense of humor.
Right. The jig is up.
Yeah.
I always feel like the jig is up. I feel really blessed. My paintings and drawings are answers to my anxiety.
Okay.
They're cathartic. They're like maybe things I would like in life, or like the gods that I'm looking for to protect me, mm-hmm. or environments that maybe the dreams I'd like to have.
Okay. Yeah. That's cool. So there's also a really deep-seated feminine, like, femininity. And I'm wondering, are you making any commentary on femininity, or is it just the vibe that you are aware of and conscious of so you put it in your work?
This gets brought up a lot when everyone looks at my work, and it's hard for me to deny at all. And it's not something I'm conscious of either. I guess because I am a lady, I know what ladies look like, so it's fun and easy for me to draw ladies. I'm not a man, so I don't really know innately what it feels like to move in that body or like look at yourself in the world. And so it's easy for me to, and then for me, like they're kind of, there's a superhero-ness about them that I kind of want for myself. And so I draw these ladies in a certain way that are empowering for me. Mm-hmm. I'm incorporating a few more gods and like male figures, but a lot of my male figures, you know, like have like kind of a, do have a sidekick or like animal, like cause quality to them. That's not like, cause it's a thing I don't understand as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's how men tend to be represented in a lot of my drawings and paintings.
So you had joked before about the jiggas up, which I think is hilarious. Do you incorporate humor? Are you trying to be funny, or is it just a quirky part of your personality? Like, you know, you don't take yourself too seriously, or it's like, or do you feel like you're having an opportunity to say something? Why don't it be funny?
Oh, I don't know. The jiggas up?
No, I mean it's like your work. I'm using that as the reference.
I don't know. I feel like there should definitely be a sense of irony. You can't take yourself too seriously.
So I notice these little text moments where you have a chance to say something, because usually, you know, visual art has its own communicative powers, but then you actually commit to text
in
your work.
Like there's a round the way girl in this one painting, and it says, "All the homeboys sweat you because you're crazy cool."
Right, which is unexpected. It's slightly juxtaposed
to this like Mother of the Sky painting where she's full of stars.
So where does that come from to just be like, you have this opportunity, you take the paint to the canvas to write words, and you choose to write cheeky, silly, funny words? Like,
what's the point if it's not fun, really? I mean, there's not too many. Sometimes art feels really selfish, even though I know it's not. But and we all need it culturally and in our lives and as people. But it does. I just don't want it to ever take it too seriously. Hip hop is important.
Holler.
That like jazz is a pure, beautiful American art form. Like started here in the U.S. of A., and it's cultural, it's rad. Like, hip-hop is important.
So what other external cultural influences get you going, get you out of bed, get you psyched?
Well, right now in life, I'm buying a lot of arts on, like right now we have these two books next to us that I brought out for these new paintings that I bought from our friend's beautiful store called These Days. It's a bookstore in LA, and it's these Tibetan shamanic books and paintings, and like tantric meditational sigils. And I've been looking a lot into, I guess, a little bit of a spirituality that I'm piecing together myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all one. I don't know. I'm just looking for, as we all are, to another kind of guiding light to keep us present and purposeful.
Mm-hmm. And were you exposed to that as a kid? Is this all coming about as an adult, this journey?
Definitely as an adult. As a kid, my parents are boat people. They're immigrants from Vietnam. So they, died trying to get to a different life. And my family is they're Buddhists. And then my parents, I think after the experience of being boat people and trying to get to America, actually now no longer practice Buddhism. They just became
to assimilate to America?
No, I think they just were like, we almost died. There's the only thing that mattered in the world. The only thing that's real is your own blood, like the people you love, your own blood, your own work ethic, because it's the only thing that's going to get you anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it. They stopped believing in other things.
Wow.
That they stopped believing that anything was going to save them, or that there's, you know. And so it's like we got out of there because we had to, and you know, and here we are, and we need to do everything we can to just, you know, there is no like flourishing life things for my parents. We didn't celebrate birthdays or Christmases, or like you're here because you are.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's nothing more, nothing less.
So all that realism being, was that given to you in a message as a kid? Like, were you brought up just kind of like, there's no fancy coding
There's no
to
fancy
stuff.
Place. Yeah, there's no fancy coding to stuff. Like, you're not special. We're all special.
Right.
Or like, yeah, there is no fancy coding. So it was really hard to want to make art and or even be good at anything. And it's funny, I remember the day that when I broke through the roof of my parents' world, and I was like, I think there's more, and I think you can do it, Mom and Dad. I don't know. I think when I decided maybe to run away and go to art school, like my parents really, I mean, they did everything they could to not support making art.
Okay.
Which is like really, I never thought of it as a big deal until as an adult when I talk about it out loud. But like, you know, like I paid for my own summer art classes in addition to the summer school I had to go to for SATs and math.
Okay.
And my parents, if my mom saw eraser dust in the dining room table, she knew I was drawing. And she would be like, no drawing in the living room. Like, no drawing. I would go home from school, not to make this to sound like, oh, poor Christelle, like, this is so great.
No.
Like, no, this is just what happened. I didn't think it was a bad thing.
In their mind, they thought they were helping you be more realistic.
Totally. Like, let's be realistic. Let's not guide her down this path to, like, this thing that, like, well, does this even work? Because for them, it's like, we don't know any successful artists. Like, there's no examples of this.
Right. So they're just being a worried parent.
Worried parents. Like, they were like, no. I would go home to garbage cans, the garbage full of my drawings from, like, weeks, you know? And I would pick out all my favorite ones, carry them in my backpack silently, and I'd take them upstairs and keep them. But my mom was like, what is all this trash? Like, this is just trash. But no, this isn't...
It wasn't vengeful. It was just...
Not at all.
You
yeah, totally.
Which, wanted you to get on a certain path that they thought was right.
Yeah, but when you're like a kid in the 80s and 90s and like, you know, you're just like, my parents, like, they don't, you know, like, it, you know, you
right.
know, you have no idea. You don't know what the bigger struggle is. And so
right.
you're just like...
I was
mad.
A struggle is struggle, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't mean anything was easier or
right.
better or whatever,
yeah.
or harder. It's just individual stories.
Totally.
And your road. So now I'm dying to know how you perceive success, because here you're given one message from your parents,
mm-hmm.
then you're going out on your own and experiencing it, and I'm sure you're observing and absorbing, like, society's
right.
appreciation for success.
Yeah.
Where you carve out your own.
I mean, it's definitely changed a lot in the last, like, 5 or 10 years, and, like, you know, I work a corporate design job, and that's how I make money. But before, I used to feel really bad about it because I used to feel like, oh, I'm a sellout, like I'm not making art. But then I started to learn in the last few years that struggle is not noble. And then who's to say I would make better art if I didn't have this job? Like, you know, who's to say anything? I'm here where I am now. So now success to me is just making any type of honest living that you're not hurting people. And then being an artist is simply, it's not about the kind of work you make or the accolades or recognition you get. It's just that you're still doing it in your 30s, you're still doing it in your 40s, you're still doing it in your 50s, and that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not you get money for it, it's that you're still doing it makes mm-hmm. you an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are you conscious of, like, a legacy at all? Like, because you're making something that will live out longer than you.
I just make.
Okay.
There isn't any more. I mean, like... And then the making, if anything, I'm seeking people to recognize that I make so I can make more things or I have more outlets. But I would make things anyways, even if no one saw them.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I wanted to know, like, what you do to not work, to relax so that you can disconnect, so you can reconnect back to your work.
I love, this is something, well, for the work, like, my design job, because I'm so immersed in, like, fashion and clothes and, like, what's going on now, what people are consuming. I noticed that, like, to relax for that part of my life, I look at things that totally don't look like what I make. So I love, which is fun, when I'm in other countries traveling for work, is I love going to sneaker stores.
Mm.
And so then I, like, look at kicks because it's, in a weird way, like, has nothing to do with my job but still touches upon it. Because I still like fashion and aesthetic things. And
mm-hmm.
so in a really weird way, I keep up on street fashion mm-hmm. and sneakers for fun, in a fun way. And then I try really hard to grow things or cook
okay.
for myself.
Okay. You said you accidentally stumbled into this because it's hilarious. But when you do for a living something that could be quantified as fun or exciting or a passion, and then you have to worry about doing it well enough to make money, it can sometimes lose the passion. Like, do you find yourself hating or being or wanting to turn away from fashion and clothes?
I work in, like, it's not quite fast fashion, but it is mass fashion. And so it is at the rate that we consume things as middle class or just people in the world, it's unsustainable. Like, we're moving our factories out further and further away. So fashion is a double-edged thing for me. Like, I love it. It's fun. We can't be naked. People should look cool and comfortable. And I love utilitarian fashion. And I love that as an outlet for expression. And in many ways, clothes is the simplest form of magic to make you transform or feel.
I love that you're putting it that way.
Good?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the simplest. When I give someone a shirt, when I'm like, oh, I think I can make you that, I'll give it to you. And people get really excited. I'm like, it's the easiest kind of spell I can possibly do. Like,
oh, it's lovely.
Yeah. And on the flip side, you know, there's a reality to it. It's still handmade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need laborers to do it, and and it's an industry, it's a worldwide, it's crazy, and so I do feel ethically compromised that I work, you know, in a large corporation that makes clothes, and the best I can do really within that machine is to myself and my team and the product I make is to control how that is produced. And so within the larger machine, I try really hard. And I fight a little bit tooth and nail, and I can come off as a little bit like rogue or, you know, like off the beaten path at my corporate job because I'm trying to maintain some integrity and some value.
It goes against the bottom line.
It goes against the bottom line, and it is really, really, you know, it's hard. It's
mm-hmm.
It's hard.
Yeah, for sure. Have you had any mentors, like any mentorship or mentor relationship, or have you gotten a chance to mentor someone?
I don't know why that's a sensitive question for me. There's I've been really lucky. I've had really nice people within that corporation be incredibly kind to me and in a way, like, you know, like people can't be naked.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Like, we need the clothes, so you may as well make the nice clothes, and like, you're a part of this thing and it feeds you. And a lot of people that guide me toward away from the, you know, like, I'm an artist, like, I feel guilty about this, this is weird, but I'm like, but I love making it too. And a lot of people just help me understand the joys of making a good product.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I think that's worth doing because we were talking before about being present and what that requires.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, Eckhart Tolle says, you know, check in. And if what you're doing isn't giving you joy, like, you only have two options: to get out of it or to accept it and find the joy in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's fantastic.
It's hard. It gets like, you know, anything you do that you do daily for 8 hours a day gets a little myopic. Like, you can't get out. And
mm-hmm.
So it is important. It is nice that I have wonderful people around me outside. Like, you're someone that popped up today,
mm-hmm.
and, like, that has nothing to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, with that world and, like, my art and, like, the friends I have aren't really in the fashion world. So it keeps me grounded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you had talked about doing some new stuff, getting some new paint. So I think we're just going to cut the conversation, and it's been a fabulous interview.
Yeah.
And I just think that we should maybe keep an eye out for each other and touch base again in the future.
I can't wait.
You know, maybe different location, different topics. We'll see, because I think that we could keep going forever. I actually have to try to, like, keep it in this, like, package of about a half hour. But
amazing.
And we've reached that, and I think it's been great, and I'm sure we could talk more. So let's just see if we can do it again.
We're going to do it again.
All right.
I'm excited.
To be continued. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to show your support through comments and reviews.